On this week's show, this is going to be our first attempt at the Beer Chef competition, where we take a homebrewed beer and put it up against a commercial example and see who wins. Think of it as like the Iron Chef of beer. So we have a beer this week from Cliff Sullivan, and we're going to taste his Lambic style ale, and we're going to have it tested by two BJCP certified judges, and we'll see how it goes this week on Homebrewing DIY. Welcome back to Homebrewing DIY, the podcast that takes on the do-it-yourself aspect of homebrewing. Gadgets, contraptions, and parts, this show covers it all. On this week's show, we have a beer from Cliff Sullivan, where he has submitted it to our Beer Chef competition, where we are going to taste his Lambic-style ale, and we are going to put it up against the commercial examples in the BJCP guidelines. Then we're going to have it tasted by two BJCP certified judges, and we're going to see which beer is the winner. This is going to be a unique show for us and hopefully an ongoing thing. So we're going to sit back and enjoy and listen to this week's episode. But first, I'd like to thank all of our patrons over at Patreon. It's because of you that this show can come to you week after week. Head on over to Homebrewing DIY's Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/homebrewingDIY and give it any amount. Right now, you are listening to this episode early if you are a patron, and if you are not, you're listening to this show on a Thursday. Another way to support the show is to head on over to Ko-fi, that's ko-fi.com/homebrewingDIY, and you can give a one-time support. That support also helps the show. The last way to support the show is head on over to our website, homebrewingdiy.beer, and you can use our sponsor banners. Do your shopping, get adventures in homebrewing, buy Brewfather, or get a brew bag from brewinabag.com, and you can even get a new kegerator from Kegco, and in doing so, you're going to support the show, and therefore, you are going to help us come to you week after week. So these are the great ways you can support the show. Remember, our upcoming Homebrew Hack Show, which is the last show of the year, is coming hard at you fast. That's actually 2 weeks away. So make sure you listen to that. It is going to drop on New Year's Eve, probably in most years, not 2020. That would be a show that would probably get some traction after New Year's Eve. But considering, hey, it is 2020 and there's not a lot of people out, you know, if you want something to enjoy the Homebrew Hack Show. So that is coming up at the end of this month, and it will be our last show of the year. So very, very excited for that. Well, I'm going to keep this kind of short and sweet. Let's just jump into this week's episode. It's kind of a long one. So we're going to do the Beer Chef competition with Cliff Sullivan and his Lambic style ale. Today, I'd like to welcome Cliff Sullivan, Austin Grippen, and of course, recurring guest on the show, we have Ryan Packmeyer. Hi, everyone. So what we're going to do is we're going to have our first attempt and our first go at our at the Homebrewing DIY Iron Beer Competition. I'd like to thank Cliff Sullivan for taking the time to ship us a beer all the way from California. And we went out and purchased some commercial examples to compare his beer to. And he went with a pretty hefty beer for our first one. We're going to do a Lambic style beer today. And I guess to start off, Cliff, why don't you tell us a bit about this Lambic style and what you were going for?
Truthfully, I was trying to find out what the contributions to the fungus and bacteria I added would have to the beer. So this was a new one for me. it's not a spontaneous firm or an ambient fermentation or anything like that. It's it has lab organisms in it, but a lot that I weren't very familiar with. So I really just was going for a blank slate, and I still don't really know how to judge this beer. So when I saw what you were doing, I figured, oh, this is a great opportunity to get some more objective feedback. Cause I know what I did to it, you know, but, you know, you don't.
No, we don't. And what we're going to, so we have Cliff's Lambic style beer here that we, and he sent us 3 750. So I hope this beer is delicious. Cause if it is, I've got a lot of it to drink by myself. My wife does like sour beer. So, I'll share some with her. We're going to do a comparative to two other commercial examples today. So we're going to compare this beer to Live in Ruins, which is a wild Saison style beer that is made by True Brewing here in Denver, Colorado. One thing that we're going to do as part of this, Ryan and I and Austin are all from Denver. And so we want to put in, and Denver has great beer. So we're always going to put in a local example from a brewery for the commercials. And then we have the Goose Boon Vat 92, which is a barrel-aged lambic beer. And this is, as far as I know, a great example of a lambic-style beer.
And yeah, that's just not fair for me. Yeah, that's pretty brutal.
You know,
it's the Bobby Flay of lambic or goose beer.
Yeah,
that's a ringer right there.
It is. But that being said, we're going to taste these beers and we're going to see how it holds up. So as guests here in our judging panel today, we're going to say that my judging doesn't matter. I am not BJCP certified. And to be honest, I think that I'm an okay beer taster. I am definitely not going to be somebody who has really studied the process of beer tasting. But I do have Ryan Packmeyer here, who has been on the show before. He is a BJCP certified judge. And then we also have Austin Grippen, who is also a BJCP certified judge. And he loves to brew lambic style beers. So he is somebody who, as a home brewer, is in love and loves the style. So let's start off. Should we start with the commercial examples and move to the home brewed, or should we start with the home brewed and move to the commercial? What are we thinking? Yeah.
So I have all the samples blind, numbered in cups.
Ah.
Wow.
Wow. We were going to do blind, and then I realized that there was no way for us individually to taste the same beer, and I was like, we should have thought about that. So that's why I was like, we'll just do it as a panel versus a blind. So you can let yourself in on what's in your numbered cups.
Do that.
And in fairness, in the Iron Chef and many of those shows, they do often know who is making the dish.
It's true. It's true.
There's no massive prize here, so I guess there's no. We'll be okay.
Exactly. So what we're going to do is let's start. I guess let's do commercial first. We'll start with let's go with the Goes Boon, and then we'll go that way, and then we'll finish with the homebrewed example at the end.
Okay.
Sound good to everyone?
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
This is a corked bottle. So,
when's the last time you had this one, Austin?
I don't think I've ever actually had Vat 92 before. I do drink. I mean, if I'm just filling a goose and I don't want to deal with buying anything expensive, I mean, normal Boom Goose is such a good go-to.
That's what I usually get. That or the Cuvée Rene.
Yeah, that's a great one, too.
Yeah, I think I've only had the other Boons like once or twice.
It's got that nice, deep Boon, dark amber color to it.
All right, so we'll start with Austin. So tasting this based on the, obviously, BJCP-style guidelines of the lambic-style beer, how does this hold up to those guidelines, and what do you think?
I mean, I think it holds up very well. It's definitely really smooth. I get a lot of vanilla actually from this. But then there's that, you know, the really nice, like, cheesy funk that comes up on the end. And then it's just kind of like a nice spice kind of going on for me personally. I think that's also probably contributed from the wood overall.
Yeah, I like this a lot. I think it hits the guidelines pretty well. There's more barrel character than you get from a lot of them, though, I think. Yeah, I can get some of that vanilla, too. Maybe like a kind of a light smokiness as well. A lot of them are more neutral than that, but this is interesting. And yeah, certainly a good beer to base the guidelines on. I think the guidelines are based on, let's see, I have it up in here. The regular Gooseboon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the first thing named in the commercial examples, actually, is the regular one. So that's not surprising at all. And I guess this one, being called Bat 92, I mean, this one is supposed to probably have a little more oak character.
Yeah, I believe so. Which is, I think it's fresh oak, and that's what also contributes to the smokiness. But
oh, yeah. Yep. Spices, smokiness, result of the oak fooder. Oak cask, yeah. Clearly contributing to the lambic aroma. Yeah, all right.
That, and I do get a slight tannin from the wood. It is very slight, but you do get that. I would say midway through it crossing the palate, it's not up front, it's not at the end, it's kind of in the middle there. And it's really when the sourness on this is very, very slight. It's there, but it's so subtle. It's
very smooth, yeah.
It's very, very smooth.
Yeah,
not tart in any way.
Especially for 8%, I think this is a dangerous winter beer.
Yeah. Yeah, with that oak barrel and the 8%, it's fuller, but it's just so smooth.
It doesn't taste like it's not boozy at all. It almost feels like a 4.5 or 5% beer. And that's really where this beer is super dangerous. That's just a great beer.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, we ready to move on to True?
Absolutely.
It has been a while since I've had a 325 from them.
Yeah. Same here. This is also, I think last time I had something from them was a clean beer. I bought their pills a few times.
Same here. Last time I had a hazy IPA from them. But I will say this is a mixed culture saison ale done in. It is also a fooder fermented beer as well. And so I felt that as a local example and what was available to me, I felt that this was something that would hold up to the VAT 92.
Well, I mean, this should be kind of like what Cliff did then.
Because, yes.
I mean, Cliff didn't spontaneously ferment it. Although, I mean, Boone didn't really spontaneously ferment it, right? I mean, they made the wort and they put it in wood casks that were just filled with bugs, I'm sure. Or their cool ship, which is filled with bugs. So, in a way, they're kind of all the same. A little more of that kind of butyric smell on the nose for sure in this one.
Definitely.
I get a touch of the, like, that horse blanket kind of smell.
Definitely a more funk forward saison from them.
Oh yeah.
Yep. And the sourness is much more assertive in this one. Whereas the Boone one, I mean, when I think Goose, I really think of like this like refined depth, complex balance. But when I think of, when I'm tasting this, it reminds me of like American sour beer almost.
Same here. It's very, very sour. I would say almost too sour.
American Wild.
I mean, it's
ale.
Good though. And you can actually taste, there's some kind of citrusy hops underneath this as well, which is definitely different than what you'd get from something from Belgium. It's actually kind of pleasant flavor, though, to be honest.
Yeah, as I keep drinking it, I like it more and more. The hops are, I think, actually coming out more and getting more bright. Yeah. Definitely just kind of needed a...
Well, it's kind of crazy when you think about how different these two beers are. Yet when you looked at the, when I looked at the label, and I'm trying to figure out what's going to be good in this panel, you're like, all right, these are made in similar ways, right? But in the end, they're really not. So,
well, they're also going for something different too. I'm sure True wasn't like, I want to make a classic goose beer when they made this. I'm sure they were just looking for fun flavors from the mixed culture, and they wanted to throw some hops in there as well to kind of give it a little more depth and help balance it out.
They definitely are. Sourness is in this.
A lot of, you know, Belgian style lambics and stuff like that, I get a tannic bite to it. It's not a sour bite, but it's clearly tannic. And a lot of American examples of mixed culture, there's not the tannic astringency that's kind of pleasing in a lambic style. It's more culture driven and not tannin driven.
I think that's, I would 100% agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, the first beer that came to mind when we were doing this locally, I was thinking like just a KC Saison or something. But that would have been more of a pain to procure, and it would have been more expensive too.
Very much so.
Which is funny, because I could tell you right now, when you look at the VAT 92, this was not an inexpensive beer, right? Yeah. We're talking, it's a 500 milliliter. This isn't a full 750 or anything like that. But it was still in that $15 to $20 range.
That's a 375, man.
Yeah, sorry, it's a 375, not even a 500.
It's small.
It's a small bottle.
And, you can get the 750 of the regular Boone Goose for cheaper than that.
Yeah, exactly. And so the idea is that when you look at it cost in comparison to things like a Casey, at least you're going to get a 500 or a 750. Even though you have the additional cost. So in all reality, it's probably pretty similar in price.
I mean, Casey's not that much. I mean, what is a Casey Saison? Is it like $18 or $20?
I think it's like $18 to $20,
yeah,
depending on variety.
And it would have...
Although, I...
Go ahead.
I did a recent Funky Blender for like $16.
Not bad.
So...
But I mean, yeah, when I think of like straight sour... Well, I guess fruited or unfruited from Colorado, like Casey's the one that really comes to mind first in my mind. But True makes some good stuff, and there's several other people that are making good stuff. Black Project would have been a valid one to go with, but Black Project's not cheap.
When you've got a dump rate of, you know, a lot of these spontaneous producers, they're dumping 30%, you know, right off the top. That makes for a pretty high overhead, I think, for... materials.
Yeah, especially the more experimental guys. Like, I'm sure someone like Casey's probably not dumping anywhere near that number at this point, I would guess.
I spent about 6 or 7 years doing a lot of spontaneous beers as a home brewer, and my dump rate was about 50%. You know, it was pretty brutal.
That's probably my dump rate on those. I've mostly done projects, spontaneous projects with club members, like full barrel type things, and yeah, I'd say about half of them were not up to what my standards would be. You know, too much vinegar, kind of obvious flaws like that, not into. But I'd imagine guys like Troy Casey, though, they're so on top of their production and best practices that I bet their dump rate's probably like, I don't know, what do you think, 10, 15% maybe, Austin?
Yeah, I think it probably is that low. He seems to really have that culture nailed down at this point.
Yeah, but I mean, there's plenty of other breweries across the U.S. that I'm sure have dumped half their beers almost, or a third of their. I've heard so many stories. Absolutely. Or just served really shitty beer. I mean, yeah, we've all had those sour producers that have served something that definitely should not have been bottled.
Can't lose that money. Can't
nice,
lose
tasty
that money.
Sour stout.
Oof. I still have not had a sour beer with roasted malt that I have enjoyed.
I like Nightmare on Brett, but I don't know if that has roasted malt in it.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. I don't think it's roasted either. It's been years since I had it, but I like that one. And I know it has some chocolate in it. I remember that it had some kind of chocolate going on, but not sure it had roasted, but that's a good one. That might be the one, actually. That would be another one to do. Crooked Stave would have been a good good example as well. They're so Brett forward, though, or at least they used to be.
I haven't tried their spontaneous blends yet, but they did win a gold medal for one of them at GABF.
I mean, they make great beer in general. Their clean beer is very good as well. I mean, those that IPA and that Keller Pils, they're both really really
Von Pilsner's beers. Delicious.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the third beer. And this is Cliff's beer. And I just cracked it, and this thing is definitely alive in the bottle. Very, very well, but that's good. It means it's going to be very well carbonated. I just cracked it. It's not bottle bomb or anything like that, but it's definitely growing out the top of my bottle.
I mean, in my mind, I don't know, Austin, correct me if I'm wrong, but in my mind, you either serve these kind of still or you serve them like, you know, super sparkling. At least that's been the way I've approached it before.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the higher the carbonation generally is kind of what they're really shooting for. I mean, that's why they have like Dreyfontein and has their decanters for sale. Like, hey, sometimes they get overcarbonated. Let them decant for a while. But yeah, I've had some of the primitive still stuff, which is interesting.
I had one of their beers at Outer Range, and it was really good. But I haven't gone up there, and I haven't had their out of the plastic bag kind of thing.
I think I've actually had it at Big Beers.
Very pretty beer.
Colors, beautiful.
This is carb to about, I think, almost 5 volumes. So.
Holy cow. Yeah. That's awesome.
It's the thick bottle.
Champagne.
Yeah. It does kind of have that the nice sparkling over the tongue. Great, like high carbonation bite to it.
Nice kind of funky barnyard smell. A little bit of that butyric sort of smell in there as well in the nose.
I have to say, when I pour this beer, it's just beautiful. You pour it into the glass, and it's so sparkling. It's clear. It's got that beautiful golden straw color to it. It's got this foamy white head that just sparkles up like champagne and then dissipates. Cliff, this is a beautiful beer.
Oh, thank you very much.
I agree.
And I'm going to agree
honestly, really balanced. It has the nice kind of like cheesy funk going on. It's very drinkable.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's closer to the Boone than the True. But it kind of has some elements of both almost. Like the Boone tastes a little more older, more aged, whereas the True tastes more fresh and has the hops. This is kind of, you know, seems kind of somewhere between. It has a lot of that fresh flavor in there, but it has a sophisticated complexity that the Boone has.
It dries out really nicely at the end of every sip, too. And there's no really overwhelming bitterness, you know, from too many, just using too much hop in the original brew. But
yeah, I feel like I'm tasting hops in it, though. Not like the True one where you get like that citrus kind of thing, but I'm getting kind of that. I think some of that earthiness there and some of that bitterness there is from a little bit of hops, a little more than the Boone probably. Because I'd be hard pressed to find any hops in the Boone.
I agree.
Just to recap, I would say pretty much the consensus is that this beer, first of all, is a beautiful beer. It's a perfect pale straw color, has a white head that dissipates quickly, is very effervescent. I think that from what both of these guys have said is it's the right balance of hops to sourness, and it's got this a very clean, dry finish. Is that a good?
Absolutely, yeah. The flavor is very pleasant on that dry finish as well. I was saying before, it's sophisticated like the Boone, but it has a lot of fresh flavor like the True. And you get just a little hint of that kind of earthy hopness in there, bitterness and hop flavor, which you don't get in the Boone, but it's not inappropriate at all. It's actually nice. I mean, the Boone uses, I think, the oak barrel and oak flavor to kind of help balance everything. And I think you used, like a lot of traditional gooses use, a little bit of hop flavor. There's a little bit of hop balance in there. Very nice, though. I like it a lot.
It is definitely a little bit more, has a little bit more of that lactic acidity there, I would say, than the Boone Goose, but it's not overbearing. It's very delicate. Yeah.
No lactic acid bacteria in that at all. So there's a lot of lactic sourness, but I don't know if you want me to tell you about the beer at all or anything to kind of.
Now's the time. Let's talk Perfect. About how, like, let's dive into how you made this beer, because I got to admit, for a home-brewed lambic example of beer, this is right up there. It is a really good beer. And so I'm curious. I want to know how you made it.
So the grain bill is pretty simple. It's just 70-30. It's a blend of pills and pale malt and flaked wheat. 4 ounces of aged hops. The mashing just to a single infusion mash at about 160 degrees for about 20 minutes. And a short boil, just a 60-minute boil. What makes it unique is this beer doesn't have any Saccharomyces, Brettanomyces, Pediococcus, or Lactobacillus in it. So it's fermented with I'm not associated with a yeast bank, from a yeast bank from a yeast lab over in Maine, and it's fermented with he calls it alternatives to alternatives. So when I read about it, I was super curious, but it's a blend of lactic acid producing yeasts and some other alternative microbes like Debaromyces and Wickerhamomyces, things that will ferment wort but and produce acid as well as ethanol and carbon dioxide, but aren't typically the main drivers of fermentation. But in this case, he put together a blend, and I was just really curious what it would do. So I put this beer together a couple years ago, and it aged for about a year in primary around 60 degrees, and then it's been in the bottle for about a year.
So the 2 year aged single batch?
Yeah, just beer. A single batch. Yeah, it was just a small pitch, so I just threw it in a carboy and.
Interesting. So technically, well, I guess the Boone. Did we lose him again?
No, I'm here.
We lost Austin this time.
Okay. The Boone Goose that we have was brewed in late 2014 and bottled at the end of 2016. So yeah, yours, I mean, it makes sense. Yours tastes fresher than the Boone. The Boone is a little older, less acidity. That might be because of your blend, or it might be because of the age. I'm guessing it's because of the blend, though. Interesting stuff. Wow.
Yeah. So just kind of knowing that, you know, the beer was made with this kind of non-traditional, you know, organisms, I kind of, it's cool to get a third party evaluation to kind of see if, you know, my brain plays tricks on me when I'm trying to evaluate my own beer. You know, it's pretty much impossible, but,
what are your thoughts on it, Cliff?
You know, the acid, it doesn't have kind of like the complex acidity that I feel you get from a lot of, lambic style beers. You know, you don't get that wine like acidity, that rounder acid profile. To me, the acid's a little sharp, kind of more like, sweet tarts, I guess, as opposed to full and round like you'd get in like a fine wine or some of the better lambics.
Sweet tarts versus Starburst is what I would say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying them side by side, I can see that totally as well.
I know that some the Debaromyces and the Wickerhamomyces, from what I've heard from lab folks, it's kind of similar to Brettanomyces in some of the flavors it produces. Okay. And then this has a lot of Pichia in it, which is another weird little bug that creates a lot of precursors that make some pretty nice flavors in the end product. So I was surprised the amount of kind of traditional funk that's in it for non-traditional funk producing things. So yeah, it's a cool beer.
Yeah. What's the ABV on this beer?
It's almost 8%. So the OG was 10.58, and it fermented bone dry. So,
I would swear it's 4.5, 5,
right? And I think this acid profile is just asking to like put raspberries or something with it, or cherries. I mean,
yeah, I thought the same thing. Yeah, that it'd be a really good fruit beer.
Perfectly fine on its own. I mean, the only time I've judged like European sours has been at big beers a few times. And after two times, I've decided not to judge European sours on a weekend of a beer festival. But I mean, this, I could totally see this meddling. I mean, that's a stiff competition. And I mean, you won that last year, didn't you, Austin? Was it European sours that you?
No, I won for American Wild Ale.
American Wild, okay. But yeah, judging European sours, I mean, I would not be surprised if this placed in the top three if it were, you know, depending on what's out there. But yeah, it's really good.
Cool.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful beer.
I mean, trying it side by side next to the Boone, I think it falls just short. The Boone has just a little too much depth and complexity. But I mean, what do you expect? The fact that it's even, I mean, I'm drinking them side by side and liking them both. The fact that I can even do that is a pretty good testament to this beer.
Oh, cool. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
Now, now personally, me, I'm not a big sour drinker. And, you know, I do drink sours occasionally, but it's not a type of beer that I personally seek out. I'm more of a traditional kind of dry saison style is more of my kind of European style. But I have to say, this beer that you've made, Cliff, is a beer I could actually see myself sitting down drinking. The acidity isn't something where, and probably because of just the way that beers are made here in the States, I feel like they go for acidity's sake. They try to punch you in the face with it. It's kind of like how I think it's just really the way Americans make beer in general. We like to, if we have hops, let's pump up hops, right? If we're going to have bitterness, it's got to have 1,000 IBUs in it. If it's going to have juiciness, it's going to be the juiciest thing that it looks like orange juice. It's going to be sour. It's got to be as sour gets. Like, there's no subtlety to American styles of sour beer. And I have to say, this beer is so well balanced. And I'm blown away that it is actually a very non-traditional culture of different yeasts and bacterias that aren't normally used to make beer. Because I feel like this does hold up to very traditionally brewed styles of beers and holds up really well. And the fact that you threw that surprise in there to me is kind of mind blowing because.
Yeah. How did you find out about that, Cliff? Tell us more about how you found out about this yeast blend.
You know, just the Milk the Funk Facebook group, you know, I've kind of been participating in it I've kind of fallen out for the last couple of years. I've just kind of gotten off Facebook in general, but, one of the members there kind of opened up his own yeast lab over in Maine, and he kind of made a post about this. It just looked really interesting because I'd heard about and played with some of these things in beer, but never to this extent to where they were the driving force behind a fermentation. You know, Picky is in a lot of stuff, but it's always in with Saccharomyces and Brett and things like that. So yeah, just on Milk the Funk, he put it together and I ordered it a few years ago just out of curiosity and was kind of blown away. It fermented to dryness in like a week, which was, you know, kind of blew me away how fast it was. Mm-hmm. And he says that depending on the carbon sources and stuff in beer, that it can do a lot of different things. So this unfortunately was the only beer I played with it. I just kind of life got in the way, but.
Does he still sell it?
Pardon?
Does he still sell the yeast strain?
I think so. I actually pulled up his website and Maniacal Yeast Labs.
I've heard of them. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're on, you know, if you search Milk the Funk on Facebook, you'll find
him. Yeah, I'm in that group as well.
Yeah. He's an awesome information source.
Awesome. Yeah. We'll have to check that out. Maybe Coulter, you can link that in the description or the notes of the episode.
Yeah, I'll link that yeast lab. Do you know what the actual yeast blend is called?
It's called Alternatives to Alternatives. So it's a
good name. An
alternative to the alternative.
Appropriate name.
Yeah. And he has a great if you go on his website, you click on the home the Pro Brewers link. He's got this great Excel spreadsheet that kind of will go into details about what's in the blend. There's a ton of stuff in it.
Nice. Yeah, next to the true one, I think it comes down to subjectivity, really. If we were just judging this against the true, totally could go either way. And I like the true one as well, but I mean, that hoppiness in the true is pretty heavy and apparent, so it just goes down to what you like.
Yeah, I agree.
Both of those are good.
I like to fall on one side or the other, and against the true, I go with Cliff's beer all day. I think it's a better, and it's a better made beer.
I mean, if I was in the mood for a Goose straight lambic, I agree with you. The hoppiness is fun in the true, though, but yeah, it's totally different. I mean, if it was a competition BJCP, and you're talking about the Goose category or something like that, yeah, Cliff's would definitely overtake it easily.
Yeah.
Many people would disqualify the true beer for hops, but that's not necessarily what it's about either.
Yeah. I did look up the true hops. They use Saaz, Mandarina, and Magnum.
Oh, okay.
So, huh. I definitely get the Mandarina, and I definitely get some like pepperiness from the Saaz.
Mm-hmm. That floral bit that I was getting is probably Saaz as well. Huh. Interesting. I wonder why they use Magnum. I mean, usually you use Magnum for like a clean bitterness, but you don't usually
need that. There's not
that's probably where you could get that bitterness from, though. You kept saying, hey, I keep getting bitterness from the hops. I mean, Magnum's a really high alpha acid.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm mostly getting flavor on the hops, and just it doesn't take a lot of hops in like a Goose lambic style beer to be obvious. I mean, if you put like a traditional 15 IBUs in the beer, it's going to taste totally wrong.
Yeah, it gets blown out.
That's why I'm surprised that there's Magnum in this.
Yeah. So quick question for you. You did say there were ancient hops. Do you know what the hop bill is of those aged hops?
No, I think they're like Mount Hood from 2005 or something. I'd have to check the bag, but
they're just in my
storage. Yeah. They've lived there forever. So
is that what you do with yours, Austin? You just use old hops, or do you have to buy old hops, or do you do something else?
Sometimes I buy old hops. Sometimes I just buy way too many hops, and then I end up with old hops.
There you go. I've got a couple sitting out in the closet that have sat there for years, and a couple more in the freezer that have sat there for years. So,
at least in the freezer, yeah, they last a lot longer.
Do you store them? Do you store them in the freezer as well, then, Austin, or do you just keep them out when you're using old hops for these kind of beers?
If it's going to be old hops, I just leave them out. I currently have hops out in like my storage unit in the backyard.
Nice.
Just being like, you just do what you want to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's just there for the antibacterial properties, right?
Yeah, exactly. Not really looking for flavor, so. Or bitterness.
Or bitterness. You're trying to actually tone that down for a sour beer.
Yeah.
What is it? Don't go over 10 IBUs. 10 IBUs is too much.
I mean, the sour is supposed to balance the alcohol instead of the hops, so that's what you end up kind of, it's like a replacement almost.
All right. So let's talk about the Iron Beer Challenge that we do have here, which is basically we've got Cliff's beer that he had submitted as a lambic style ale. And then we are going up against the Goose Boon Vat 92. And if we were to take those two, you know, what would you say, Ryan, of the Vat 92 versus the beer that was given to us by Cliff? Which one would you go for?
I'm going to edge the Vat 92 just because the added depth and complexity that it has. But they're both in the discussion. And if you add the true in there, I'd probably take Cliff's beer as number two. So, yeah, that's the way I see it.
Awesome. Austin, your thoughts?
Yeah, I feel the same as Ryan. The Boon Goose is just very complex. I mean, he's been doing it for so long. It's a little bit unfair, and it is like go-to Goose for me. So, and the Vat 92 is delicious, but I agree with Ryan. Cliff's beer is number two for me. I like the true, but really, for, you know, it's the middle of the road, it's delicate, it's balanced. I can drink a 750 of this, most likely.
Awesome. If you were judging this beer in a competition, what score could you see Cliff's beer getting?
High 30s, low 40s, I'd say. I guess out of 50, usually. Yeah, BJCP usually you can sometimes, I think the lowest score I've ever got that's medaled is like low 30s. But 50 is like a perfect score, but most people will never give a perfect score no matter what, it seems like. so usually if you get low 40s, you at least get a medal. So I would say like high 30s, low 40s, which could be enough to win a competition in its category. It could be enough for bronze, just depending on what other beers fall in it. There's no like obvious fault here where I'd say like you need to really improve X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, I don't have like real specific critiques. I mean, this is really how the fermentation went, how the beer turned out, and I think it's delicious and enjoyable. So it's really tough to say, you know, what I would really, you know, say to improve upon in next iterations, because I also haven't messed around with this very unique yeast culture.
Yeah. It's almost like drinking an IPA that's really good, and it may not be the best IPA you've ever had, but it's a very good IPA, and you're not going to sit there and say like X, Y, or Z is wrong. It's just like, you know, maybe a different hop blend could make it slightly better. And many other hop blends can make it worse. So, yeah, it's very good. Very good beer.
Cliff, do you have any questions for these guys?
No, man. I'm glad you guys like it. It was super fun beer for me to make. Definitely like to play with the culture more. I'd love to see what this would do with wood and oak, you know, because this was just an all glass fermentation. So,
yeah, a little bit of wood and definitely some fruit would be fun.
The only thing that scares me about this, that lactic acid yeast, you know, it's not really inhibited by hops, you know, so if once it's in your brewery, you're going to know it's in your brewery. So I'm not sure I want to put this in a barrel that I ever want to reuse for something else, just in case the acidity gets just completely away from me. There's no way to dial it back.
Sure.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. I try to keep my culture as tame as possible. But, you know, that doesn't always work out.
What about putting something like oak chips in these kind of beers? I've never done it personally. We've only done barrels, but I don't know. You guys might have experience with that.
I used to use them. Go ahead.
Sorry. I've only used oak chips or oak cubes in stouts. I've never tried them in any mix for style beers.
Yeah, that's the same for here.
Yeah, when I made wine, you know, we used a lot of oak cubes and oak spirals just to try and extend the life of a barrel a little bit and put more oak into the wine. But I've never really messed with them with beer too much.
Yeah, I wouldn't put fresh oak, obviously, but I'm just wondering if you can kind of replicate the process by throwing oak that's almost completely used up, so you just get a little tiny character from it. I guess it'd be hard to go between neutral, not doing anything, and actually doing something, since the oak is often, the barrel is often a holding vessel for these kind of beers more than anything.
There's some oak powders out there that are really interesting that are actually meant to be added at primary fermentation for wines.
Those probably give up way too much tannin though, right? An oak character is my guess.
My guess, but I just heard from a winemaker like a few weeks ago, but it's kind of interesting that supposedly it adds a lot of you know, vanillins and a lot of smoother, rounder tannic flavor as opposed to the kind of the more harsher you know, kind of tan bark type character. So I don't know, something I've wanted to play with beer is, you know, getting a hold of some of this oak powder and adding it, you know, at yeast pitch and kind of seeing what it does, because you know, seeing what the vanillins and the oak do when they're put into primary fermentation, see if there's any transformation that goes on.
Interesting. Well, thank you for sharing this beer. This is excellent, Cliff. Good one to, you know, start the inaugural Beer Chef episode.
I agree. This was a beer that when he was like, yeah, I'm going to send you a lambic beer, I was like, man, I was thinking like a cream ale, but we'll go with a lambic.
I was just hoping it wasn't going to be like, you know, like a vinegar bomb kind of thing.
No, it was far from it. This was an amazing beer.
Yeah, the complete opposite.
Yeah. I actually, Cliff, in our conversations, just me and Ryan talking back and forth together, I actually was like, no, man, we're going to get homebrewers to send us good beers. And thank you for making me right today.
Cheers. Glad I could do it. Glad you liked it.
Awesome. So just to wrap this up, thank you so much for being part of this and taking the time and effort to ship this beer out to us and letting us taste it. This is wonderful. I am going to send you a Scrubber Ducky set. So after this, just get me your address. You can just DM me it in Discord and I'll get it sent out this week. And, you know, that's just my way of saying thank you for taking the time to be part of the show.
Awesome. Thanks for judging. I appreciate it.
Now we're going to jump into some of our feedback. First, I'd like to read some feedback that I got on Discord. This is some feedback from Machine Whisper. I thoroughly enjoyed the episode 64 rerun of the Brewpry remix. I may go that way eventually. How many homebrewers out there have bought enough parts to make 5-inch ice spindles, but have only made a couple? That's where I'm at. I cannot justify spending the money on controls when I have so many other higher priority things to buy. I cobbled together an electric kegel and a controller on the cheap, and it works great. And by my next build, I'm going to be more automated for an electric brew in a bag kettle controller based on the leftover Webmos D1 minis and the runs to the Voda Ties Brew Mechanics ESP8266. It is amazing how much you can do with it, with that little board. It's designed to use an LCD 2004 display and a 4-button keypad, but also has a web server interface. I will upload the beer XML file and then set itself up accordingly. The PID has an auto-tune feature too, and it looks pretty powerful as I got mine operational on a keyboard using a D1 Mini, 3 transistors, 3 resistors, a cheap KY-019 relay, and the pups up from a buzzer, and an SSR for the element. I've already had a corded DS1 8B20 probe in the thermal well, but that looks like it's going to get started, and it had a keypad LCD and an IO expander later. I wanted to put that in the detachable 3D operated control panel, 3D printed operator control panel. How about this episode about brewing with the ESP8266? Maybe I could help after I get mine done in brewing. And, you know, Machine Whisperer, I would say, great. If you've built all of this using an ESP8266, I would love to have you come on the show. I'd love to have that conversation. I also did give him some feedback that he should look at Fermentrack as a good controller. Also, because it does use the D1 Mini as the controller. And also to look at BrewBlox, even though you do have to buy the hardware for that, it is a pretty built-out hardware system, and it does do both fermentation and a brewery. So those were some advices of some projects to look into. But that being said, I would say, Machine Whisper, you go out and you've built this controller out of all of these ESP8266, and you turn it into an open source project, I'd love to have you on the show. We'd love to talk to you about it. So, yeah. I have one more piece of feedback from Milwaukee 2. And he said, and this was also from our Discord server. So, you know, this is a great place to come and interact with the show. Love the Discord server. But this is what I heard from Milwaukee 2. So I was reminded today of one of my all-time favorite beers, which has since been retired from a local brewery. And it was a beer called Lightburn from Lakefront Brewery. And here's what he said. As I remember it fondly and lamented that I would likely never taste it again, I thought, why not brew it? Does anyone here have a recipe that I could find? And I know that I might have some trial and error, but I wanted to find a decent starting point. And the style of beer that this is actually a Doppelbock. And, you know, Ryan and I kind of hopped in and we were like, hey, Milwaukee, check out maybe the German Brewing Facebook group. But then he actually responded to us later and was like, hey, I reached out to the brewery and they were kind enough to share the recipe sheet. And here's his scaled down version. And he shared it with me. And this looks like a really solid Doppelbock recipe. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to take this shared recipe and I'm going to add it to this week's show notes for a Doppelbock. And this is a clone recipe for the Lightburn from Lakefront Brewery. So just if you're curious about this beer, hop on, check out the show notes on the website, homebrewingdiy.beer, and there we'll actually have the recipe in beer XML, so you can just download it and import it right into your brewing software. So one last thing, if you do want to leave us feedback, you can always send us an email to homebrewingdiy.beer. Just head over to our website and click on the contact banner, or you can send an email over to podcast@homebrewingdiy.beer. Either way, you're going to get it to us. Another way to submit us feedback or just to talk to us is if you go to the website homebrewingdiy.beer, hit the Join the Discussion tab. That will get you access into our Discord server. And there you can interact with not only me, but all the other brewers that are in this community. It's a good time. It's a small but growing community of homebrewers that are on Discord. And we love just chit-chatting about beer. So it's a good time. I'd like to thank Cliff, Austin, and Ryan for all taking the time to hop on a video call and to record it and to really sit down and do this beer chef competition. It was a really fun time. I enjoyed the beers that we tasted, and man, it was a really good time. I was so surprised at how good Cliff's beer was. Not that I didn't think he was going to send us a good beer. I kind of knew we were going to get great beers here, but Cliff, this was a really great example of a wonderful beer that you'd made us. So I want to thank you for doing that. You can find Homebrewing DIY on all the socials. So head out to Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Just look for all one word at Homebrewing DIY. We're there. Interact with us, talk to us. We'd love to hear from you. Well, that's it for this week. We'll talk to you next week on Homebrewing DIY.